The following Thursday broadcast is from our vast Compassion Radio archives. On today's Compassion Radio.
But you only need one outbreak, one set of persecutions and massacres, and that can destroy a community forever. And that's really what happens to Christians in many parts of the Middle East.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Answer: a mind like an encyclopedia. Question: what talents do you need to possess in order to win on a game show like Jeopardy? Hello and welcome to the Daily Radio Ministry Journal, known as Compassion Radio. Today's program is a continuation of yesterday's fascinating discussion on the lost history of Christianity. And yes, it's safe to say that Norm's guest truly possesses an encyclopedic mind. We've got lots of ground to cover, so here's Norm to get us started.
Well, our guest today on Compassion Radio and back for a second day is Dr. Philip Jenkins, who is professor of history and religious studies at Pennsylvania State University and also distinguished fellow at the Institute for Studies of Religion at Baylor University. Welcome back to Compassion Radio today, Dr. Jenkins.
Thank you very much.
Well, listen, we had a very productive and interesting discussion with you yesterday about your excellent book, which has been around now for a number of years, called The Lost History of Christianity. And yesterday we spent quite a bit of time talking about the whole matter of this lost history of Christianity, a period of about 1,000 years of history, which has, in a sense, been lost to us here in the West. We have not paid attention, perhaps, as we should, and we don't have the information that we really should have in understanding this very important period of the history of the Christian movement, the Christian church. Dr. Jenkins, turning to a new discussion today, you have a very provocative chapter in your book about how faiths die. And I want to ask you that question, have you enumerate for us how it is that a faith can die. The lead into this discussion was something we were talking about yesterday, and that is the emptying out of Christians from the nation of Iraq and the very ancient historic church existing in Iraq since virtually New Testament times. That really is sort of the launching point for our discussion today, and that in itself is something about which I think every Christian in here in America should be concerned. Do you see the possibility that in the nation of Iraq we could see the total emptying out of the Christian church, the Christian population, from that country in a period of, let's say, the next decade or so? Is that a possibility?
Well, it's certainly a possibility. In fact, things like that have happened not too far away from that region in the not-too-distant past. And I would look at what is now the country of Turkey. Back in 1900, Turkey was probably, it might have been 10, perhaps 20% Christian. By the mid-1920s, it had basically lost that population entirely. And the proportion of Christians had fallen from, say, 10 to 20% to perhaps less than 1%. And so it became a totally marginal presence. In effect, ancient communities with roots in the New Testament were destroyed in a short time. So absolutely, that could happen.
I don't want to get too political about this, Dr. Jenkins, but certainly anybody who's spent any time in the Palestinian territories, certainly anyone who has been beyond the tourist areas, let's say, of Bethlehem. There has been for a considerable amount of time, for decades, the systematic emptying out of the Christian population, Palestinian Christians, from literally the birthplace of the Christian movement. How do you appraise that situation? I've always felt that when I was there, that the Christian population among the Palestinians is really caught in the middle. They're in an almost no-win situation, but it is very sad to see the number of Christians emptying out, going to other countries, and fleeing from the place, literally, from Bethlehem, where our Lord Jesus Christ was born.
Right, and again, there's a there's a long story here, but what happened was that Christians represented a sizable share of the Palestinian Arab population, say 100 years ago, maybe as many as 15%, some would say 20%, and they represented the more educated, the more prosperous people. And as the struggles happened between Israel and Palestine of the 20th century, the Christians took the lead in that nationalist struggle. We remember the guerrilla movements, the Palestinian guerrilla movements of the 70s. Often they were headed by Christians, by people like George Habash. And obviously the name George suggests somebody who is a Christian. Partly it was a result of getting away from the violence. Partly it was the rise of new fundamentalist Muslim organizations among the Palestinians. But over the time, Christians not only were under great pressure to move out, but because they had a little bit more money, they were able to do so. And they moved to the United States, they moved to Europe, and they moved to Australia. You know, we often forget that when we look at Arab populations in the United States, probably 75% of Arab Americans are, in fact, Christian.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Dr. Jenkins, let's move into a discussion of this chapter, very important chapter in your book, The Lost History of Christianity, called How Faith Die. Enumerate for us, if you will, the factors that enter into the killing, the dying out of a faith.
Well, the first thing to say is that faiths have died. I mean, in the past, there were more world religions than there are now. For many centuries, for instance, there was a great religion that spread across Europe and Asia called Manichaeanism. In its day, it was a great rival of Christianity. Even the great Saint Augustine, when he was young, was a Manichaean himself. And it ceased to exist at the end of the Middle Ages. It's an interesting question as to whether there was one man or one woman who was the last Manichaean. And when that person died, that was the end of the faith. But in other cases, religions were destroyed in particular areas. In the 17th century, for instance, Christianity was very strong indeed in Japan, and it was subject to very intense persecution, and to all intents and purposes, it was destroyed there. One point I make is that people often worry about religions dying, and they can become very weak. But the only way a religion can be destroyed entirely is by being killed, not by fading away. So in every case I've ever looked at that religions die away, it's not just that people give up on them, it's that they are destroyed by systematic, constant persecution, either by people of rival religions or of no religions at all.
Is there any internal component, or is the threat essentially external, from the outside?
The big variable seems to be how deeply rooted a religion is within the community. And I use one example. If you look back at Roman times, two of the main centers of Christianity, well, one was in Egypt and the other was in North Africa, the area that we call Tunisia and Algeria. And when Islam came along, those two religions had totally different faiths. The church in Egypt just carried on. It carries on today, very strong, very confident. But the church in North Africa, Tunisia, Algeria, was destroyed almost overnight. Within 50 years, Muslims were saying, well, we can't find any Christians. You know, there may be a few around, but we really don't see them. And so what's the difference between the two? And the difference is very instructive. In Egypt, the Christian churches put their religion into the language of the people. They made it something which ordinary people believed, that part of being Egyptian was being Christian. And it was very hard then to persuade them not to. And so the way Egypt became Muslim was as much a case of bringing in Muslim immigrants who would gradually take over as by destroying or converting those older churches. In North Africa, Christianity was the religion of elites rather than of ordinary people or peasant people. They didn't take Christianity to the ordinary people. And so when the elites fled, as they did when the Muslims came, the ordinary people were quite happy to convert. So it's a question of how deeply placed in the ground, how deep in the soil the faith is, as to whether it can be uprooted.
Now, if we consider such places as Iraq, for example, where the Christian faith has sunk its roots deeply into the soil of that nation over several centuries.
Right.
How is it possible for, let's say, the Christian faith in a place like Iraq to die? Is it possible that the faith could be driven from the country and cease to exist in Iraq? In addition to that, how deeply the roots of the faith go. You've mentioned already the Christian population of Iraq and of some of the other countries in the Middle East and elsewhere have tended to be rather elite in terms of education and social status and income. What's your prognosis for Iraq, let's say?
When I look at Iraq, I see a process that's happened over over many centuries. What happened was 1,000 years ago, probably a majority of the population were Christian, but increasingly they were replaced by newer Arab, Muslim, migrant populations. The country became more and more Muslim. And by the time you got to the 20th century, you're dealing with about a 5% minority. So they just got worn down very slowly over time. And then they become weak enough that they actually can be driven out, can be excluded. But I think it is perfectly possible that within a few years, you know, you can go to towns in Iraq and they will point to, you know, that's where the church used to be. And maybe in some cases they'll point to one person and say, that is the last Christian in the town. Mm. So in that sense, the church will have died. And I say that not with any happiness, but I say it with confidence, because that's exactly what happened in large sections of the country that became Turkey, where you can go to those communities and see where the church was in 1915, before the great massacres, and see that it just is not there anymore. And sometimes you'll find one surviving Christian, a very old person, and when that person dies, then that is the end of the church in that region. So yes, certainly it could happen.
That's a very sobering prospect to consider. One of the things that you talk about in your book, you talk about some of those who are writing books today, for example, who present a rather sympathetic account of the spread of Islam. You pretty much take that apart, and you mentioned that it's very easy for us to forget, perhaps because we are to some degree removed from the rather violent means that were used by Islamic armies and so forth to spread Islam across the Middle East and Central Asia. Talk a little bit about that whole process of how Islam spread, and to some degree it seems to me they're rather misleading accounts on the part of those who have a sort of sympathetic way of describing the spread of Islam.
Right. It's a complex story. It's certainly not a simple, you know, night and day, black and white story. Mm. And you do get something of that recently in some accounts of the early days of Islam. It's presented as being a religion which is, you know, welcomed in some areas, and it just takes over. And we rather tend to forget the Christians are there for a long time. Like I say, it's a mixed story. There are periods of centuries when Christians and Muslims get on perfectly well. They collaborate, they cooperate perfectly well. But it's rather like the story of Jews in medieval Europe. In medieval Europe, Christians and Jews get on well for centuries, but you only need one outbreak, one set of persecutions and massacres, and that can destroy a community forever. And that's really what happens to Christians in many parts of the Middle East. And there are periods of persecution, for instance, in the 14th century, which are just horrendous, I mean, which inflict the most savage violence on those communities. And then in relatively modern times, you have some of the worst persecutions of all.
I think your counsel is very well taken on that point, Dr. Jenkins. You know, some years ago, I was at a meeting of Arab Christian pastors on the island of Cyprus. And in our discussion, I happened to mention to a veteran missionary statesman, there's no other way to describe this man, and I was talking to him about the conflict going on between Christians and Muslims, let's say in Sudan and also in Nigeria, where you have Muslim north and you have Christian south. And I said, how do you appraise that situation? And he took a bony finger and pressed it into my chest. And he said, Norm, what we are witnessing is the battle for the soul of an entire continent. That was a very sobering comment on his part to me. Is he accurate about that? Are we in a situation where we have a kind of spiritual conflict going on for an entire continent, let's say in this case, the continent of Africa?
Well, there certainly is a great conflict going on. And, you know, if you talk to African clergy, I'm always struck how often they will refer to the fate of the ancient African church, because, of course, Christianity has been in Africa and withdrawn. You know, if you go back to St. Augustine's time, then Carthage in North Africa was one of the greatest centers of Christianity, and then it was basically destroyed. If you talk to a modern Ugandan or Nigerian, they will say, you know, our African Christianity is not going to go the same way as this. We're not prepared to see it destroyed. I don't want to present a picture of simple conflict. You know, there are lots of parts of Africa where the two faiths get on. And one thing you often find is when you talk to an African Christian, an African Muslim, they will tell you how many of their relatives belong to the other faith.
Mm, yes.
So a Christian will have, you know, a Muslim cousin, a Muslim aunt. So that makes it difficult to talk of straight conflict. But certainly there is that line running across Africa, 10 degrees north of the equator, the 10th parallel. And that really is such a critical battle line, I hate to say. You mentioned Sudan. Of course, now Sudan has divided into two countries, Muslim Sudan and Christian South Sudan. And as you look at those two countries, you look and wonder, will that be one of the literal battlegrounds of the next few years? Well, we look at the civil war in Sudan over the last 20 years, which killed some 2 million people.
Well, Sudan is an area where Compassion Radio has been involved now for quite a few years. And we're very interested, of course, to see the division of the country having taken place. I can tell you this, that from my experience in Khartoum, as difficult a government as that is, that's one of the most vibrant Christian churches that I've seen in all my life, is in the area of Khartoum. And I can recall one of the pastors there who was himself responsible for the creation of, in his case, 18 different congregations right in the city of Khartoum. Mm-hmm. He was telling me at that point that Christianity had grown, that the church had grown at a rate for a number of years at about 9% every year in the north of Sudan. Mm-hmm. And quite apart from being pessimistic about the future of Christianity in the north, he was very bullish, I might say, on the growth of Christianity, and very active and very positive about, you know, the future of the church, even in the north. So maybe what we have here is the clash of two fast-growing missionary religions. But the thought comes to mind, by the way, I don't know whether you know a gentleman by the name of Michael Cassidy, who is the president of an organization known as African Enterprise, wonderful ministry all across Africa, but who said to me when I was at the Lausanne conference there in Cape Town late in 2010, he said, one of our great weaknesses is that, he said, the Muslims seem to have a plan for achieving dominance in Africa. And then he said, we Christians do not. We are so entrepreneurial in terms of, you know, the multiplication of this little organization and that little organization. He said, it's been very difficult for us to coordinate our efforts in a way that strengthens everyone. I thought that was a very instructive statement.
It is, but if you look at the numbers overall, the advantage has definitely been to Christianity. I mean, I'll give you one statistic, which I find interesting, which is that during the 20th century, approximately 50% of the people of Africa shifted their allegiance from old primal traditional religions to one of the great world religions. And at a rate of 4-1, they opted for Christianity. 40% went for Christianity, 10% to Islam. Mm. And when you look at some of the conflict in countries like Nigeria and Sudan, one of the great reasons driving that is fear by Muslims that Christian growth has been so great. Mm. And, you know, it must be met in some way. So partly it is a response to Christian success. So perhaps Christians haven't had that central organizing plan, but if you look at the organizing plans generally, that could perhaps be one of their strengths.
Well, we would certainly say that the power of the Holy Spirit has been putting wind in the sails of the Christian movement in Africa and other parts of the global south. And that's
To give you another figure, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, one thing I find interesting is that in 1900, Africa was home to 10 million Christians, absolutely tiny share of the Christian population of the world. By 2050, there will be probably 1 billion African Christians.
My.
By that point, Africa will be the largest Christian continent, and those African Christians will account for 1/3 or more of all the Christians on the planet. So that's a religious revolution.
That's an incredible statistic. Well, we'll pray that that is how things materialize. Our guest today, as yesterday, has been Dr. Philip Jenkins from Pennsylvania State University and also from Baylor University. Dr. Jenkins, your books have instructed us, and hope that you keep turning out your marvelous books and continue to instruct us on understanding the world of religion, but certainly from the standpoint of our faith, to appreciate what God is doing around the world and helping us to be more informed as we seek to fulfill our mandate to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. Thank you so much for being our guest on Compassion Radio.
Thank you so much.
Another splendid conversation from our vast audio archive here at Compassion Radio. I trust you enjoyed that. And by the way, you can listen again to today's broadcast or any of our daily programs right there on our website at CompassionRadio.com. Just click on Broadcasts at the top of the page. Here with a very important word on our December project, the incomparable Dr. Norm Nelson.
Bethlehem Bible College may not be familiar to you, especially if you're a fairly new listener to Compassion Radio. Well, you need to know about this amazing school, located right on the main road between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. In fact, it's just a short distance from Manger Square and the site of our Lord's birth in Bethlehem. It's a place that you need to visit the next time you go to the Holy Land. Now, Bethlehem Bible College was founded back in 1979 by Dr. Bashara Awad. It was created to provide training in the Bible, in theology, and in other necessary disciplines needed by Palestinian Christian young people who feel the call of God on their lives to serve the Lord in ministry. One of the most unfortunate blind spots that we American evangelicals have is our lack of awareness about or indifference toward the vibrant and spiritually alive community of Christian brothers and sisters that exists among the Arab population of Israel's Palestinian territories. I'm not hesitant at all to say that I believe that Bethlehem Bible College is the most important Christian educational institution that exists today anywhere in the Middle East. The young people it is training for ministry in the service of Christ hold the key to the resolution of the seemingly unsolvable conflict between Jew and Arab in Israel and beyond. Now, my friend, isn't this exactly what we're all looking for in the Middle East? We are supporting the scholarship fund of Bethlehem Bible College and offering financial assistance to the committed students who are pursuing a Christian education but who lack the funds to cover the costs of their study at this wonderful college. Now, here's how you can help to cover the cost of educating one of the deserving students at Bethlehem Bible College.
Every student contributes what they can. Many students can contribute nothing more than their very lives. And that, of course, is the biggest contribution of all. Can we help with the minor costs of training them to bring Jesus to the Muslim-majority countries all around them? Of course we can. All it takes to train a pastor is $900 a year. That's around $100 a month, or $25 a week. And that's for everything they need. It's an unbelievable value, and one of the best investments in kingdom building that we've ever seen. As Compassion Radio partners, you have liberally helped us equip the church at one end of the Silk Road. Please help us this month to equip the church at the other. This is the very birthplace of our faith, after all, and is still equipping new pastors for their role in winning souls for Christ in the heart of the Palestinian territories and other countries throughout the Middle East. Would you consider making this your Christmas gift to Jesus? For gifts of $25 or more, we'll even send you a gift crafted personally by believers who live in Bethlehem. There's a very limited supply of these, so make your contribution early. Thank you for helping the church around the world from one end of the Silk Road to the other.
Thanks for that good word, Bram. And on a musical note, so to speak, we have some of our wonderful Christmas music in stock from Morningsong and the Chapel Singers while supplies last.
Oh,
offer those for a love gift of $15 for CDs and $10 for the cassette version. And finally, with the countdown to 2017 upon us, we need to remind you that Compassion Radio comes to you daily and reaches out in compassion to those who need to see and experience the love of Christ, only through your financial support. Finally, for your gift of $25 or more, we would like to send you, at your request, a token prayer reminder made for you in the little town of Bethlehem. Bethlehem Bible College students are directly involved with choosing and preparing each item. We trust you will treasure this unique thank you gift as it reminds you to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, which directly affects Bethlehem. You can reach us by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address, Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That address again, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And our web address, of course, available to you 24/7 at CompassionRadio.com. That phone number once more, 1-800-868-2478. This is Jim Governale. On behalf of our Compassion Radio team, have a blessed day in the Lord. And we'll see you tomorrow for the next Compassion Radio.